We are holding on Hough Days on the Bay's last line. We're in the middle of discussing the question, which we started yesterday. When it comes to the menorah, when it comes to the Hanukkah lights, do we say hadlaka osa mitzvah or hanacha osa mitzvah? What is the essential part of the mitzvah? That you're lighting it or that it's placed in the correct location and lit? So we said, for example, so one nafkamina, Tosfos had pointed out, let's say, for example, a cheresh shot of a cotton lit it, or let's say he placed it down. If you say hadlaka osa mitzvah, then if a cheresh shot of a cotton lights it, no good. If you say hanacha osa mitzvah, as long as afterwards you placed it in the correct place, even if it was already lit, then it would be fine. If we say hanacha osa mitzvah, then the other way around, where if the cheresh shot of a cotton places it in the correct location after it's lit. If you say that if you, a regular person, lit it, and then the cheresh shot of a cotton put it where it belongs, then you would have a problem. So we tried bringing a couple of proofs. They didn't want to shot them down because you could say in those particular cases, the case where a person is holding the light the whole time, the case where he lights it inside and then takes it outside, in both those cases, it's not so obvious that you lit it for the sake of the mitzvah in the first place. So you could say maybe for that reason it's no good. That doesn't necessarily prove that is not a consideration, that it should be a problem.
We make the bracha on adlaka.
That's what we're going to point that out soon. Wait. Choshma, the amr of the shuvan maybe, ashoshes shahosa delekis vahilekis koloyim koloy. Suppose you have a lantern that was lit throughout the whole day. So in other words, you lit it on Erev Shabbos. Rashi learns that the case is you lit it for the Hanukkah candle on Erev Shabbos. So you lit it on Erev Shabbos of Hanukkah for your Hanukkah candle, and then it continued burning throughout the 25 hours of Shabbos, because you had enough oil in it for that. L'matzoi Shabbos, mechabo madlika. On Matzoi Shabbos, you have to put it out, and only then relight it for that night's Hanukkah candle. Tosfos actually learns a little differently, that we're talking about that you lit it to begin with for Shabbos, rather than for Hanukkah. But whatever it is, the point is, if you say that the essential thing is the lighting, shaker, well, then we understand very well why you have to put it out now and relight it, because the fact is you didn't light it tonight. Tonight is, let's say, the third night of Hanukkah. So you have something that's been burning continuously since last night, the second night of Hanukkah. You didn't light it tonight for the mitzvah of Hanukkah. So therefore, we'd understand very well why it is that you have to put it out and then relight it. Give me a moment, Alice. Talk. But if you were to say that the essential mitzvah is that it has to be placed in the correct place and lit, then not only you should have to put it out. What you should actually have to have is that you would put it out, then lift it up, then put it back down, and only then relight it. Because if we're saying the hanocha is the essential thing, it has to be placed in the correct place. Right now, you don't have it. Right now, it's still placed in the same place as it was yesterday. So obviously, that should show the fact that the braisa says you only have to relight it shows that the essential thing is the hadlaka, not the hanocha. And furthermore, like you said, Avraham Moshe, midikam of achin and asher kedushanim and mitzvayt of the tivanu lahadlik ner shel Chanukah, given that the nusach of the bracha is that we make the bracha that we were commanded, and we'll talk about later on the Yom, where exactly are we commanded, it's not a mitzvah midaraisa, but anyway, that we're commanded to light the ner shel Chanukah, shmamina hadlaka is a mitzvah. That shows that the hadlaka is the essential mitzvah. Shmamina, so that proves that. Now, Tosfos points out, in that case, we started, how did we get into this discussion? We got into the question, we were discussing the question, are you allowed to light one candle of the menorah from another one? And we said, Rabbi Yeshua said, it depends. If we say hadlaka osa mitzvah, then you would be allowed to. So it comes out then, if now we're saying hadlaka osa mitzvah, it comes out, you would be allowed to light one candle of the menorah from another. So technically, that should be the din. However, Tosfos says the minhag is not to do that, so therefore we don't change the minhag, and therefore we don't do that. Not only we don't light up the Hanukkah candles one from another using a match, which again, we said yesterday, Shmuel might even allow that, but we don't even light them directly one from the other. That's how we do it. We use the shamash or whatever to light each one. We don't light one from another. Mm-hmm. the Magen Avraham actually wants to say that the same thing should apply not only to Hanukkah candles, but also to other candles and mitzvahs. For example, the same thing would apply as far as lighting Shabbos candles, but the minhag is not like that. The minhag is that people have no problem lighting Shabbos candles one from another. It applies only to the Hanukkah candles.
Okay. So what happened, we said yesterday in the Beis Midrash, they used to light one candle from another candle?
So we said this. So we actually asked. If we say according to Rav that you're allowed to light one from another directly, you're just not allowed to light one from another using a match, then fine. But if we say that according to Rav you're not even allowed to light one from the other directly, then why is it in the Beis Mikdash they were allowed to? And we left off with Kasha. We left off. Okay, it's a Kasha on that version of Rav. It doesn't completely refute what Rav Abba by Abba's explanation of Rav, but it was a Kasha. So Gemara says one possibility I saw brought up is that maybe the difference is with the menorah you have to light all seven candles every night, whereas when it comes to the menorah of Hanukkah, technically, as we learned at the very beginning of the sugya on Chof Aleph on the day, the primary mitzvah is just to light one candle every night. The fact that we light one the first night, two the second night, etc., is only mahadrin and not mahadrin, so therefore maybe there's less reason to allow it. Okay. The Gemara says, "V'hashi d'aminin havlaka oisa mitzvah." Now that we said that the essential thing is the lighting, and that's what primarily is the mitzvah, then it means if lit a cheres shot of a cotton light also below kulum. Then it means if a cheres shot of a cotton lit the menorah, then it's no good because they can't be motzi you. Because so again, if we said anocha oisa mitzvah, you would be able to make it good by afterwards taking that lit menorah and placing it in the proper place. But now that we say Havlaka is a mitzvah, that doesn't work. You would have to put it out, and the Ben Das would have, the Gadol would have to put it out and relight it in the proper place. Also, the Gemara, by the way, doesn't mention another Nafkamina, but it's mentioned in Shulchan Aruch. Let's say, now we learned before, the menorah has to have a minimum amount of oil in it, enough to burn for at least a half hour, or okay, all minhag is 50 minutes, whatever. What if you lift the menorah with less than the proper amount of oil in it, and later on you added more? Given that we're saying Havlaka Oisa Mitzvah, that doesn't work, because to begin with, when you lit it, there wasn't enough fuel in there. Therefore, no good, you weren't Yotze the Mitzvah, and you would have to relight. This is, by the way, the fact that you need a half hour's worth of fuel in there is one reason that the Poskim Achronim talk about why you can't use electric lights for a menorah. And now, if you have no other choice, let's say a person's in a hospital, chas v'shalom, then they have no choice. Then okay, you know, it's the least worst option. But otherwise, we're not yotze with an electric one, because in an electric bulb, you don't have fuel over there. You have there's a constant flow of electricity. That's what keeps it lit. But you can't say that when you light it, you have right then a container containing a half hour's worth of fuel. Okay. Continues the Gemara. Isha bade mavlika. Now, on the other hand, a woman can light menorah and even be motzi a man with it. The Amr Rabbi Shulman Levi, Noshim Chayavas v'Ner Chanukah. Rabbi Shulman Levi says, women are chayav in Ner Chanukah. She'af hein ho'yu ba'oisya nes, because they were also involved in that nes. What does that mean? Rashi says two explanations. One is that we know that one of the gzeiros that the Greeks made in those days is that any woman, before she gets married, has to first be taken by the local goyish ruler. To boil the Hegman Tchila, the Gemara mentions that concept in Ksubas and in Sanhedrin. So when the Hashmonaim beat the Greeks, then they were saved from that terrible Gzera. In fact, there is actually a Medrash that attributes the beginning of the rebellion of the Hashmonaim to a daughter of Matisyahu who was in that situation. She was about to get married. The local Greek ruler was about to assert his rights under this law that they had, and she convinced her brother, don't let this happen, don't let me be defiled by this guy, go and fight against him, and then there's a medrash that brings the fact where the rebellion began. So that's number one. Number two, you had Esther was a different situation.
She is a mean person.
I'm aware of it, but nevertheless, the Gemara talks about Sanhedrin a different thing. She wasn't required to be Moshe Nefesh for it. And in her case, Mordechai knew with Ruach HaKodesh that something special was going to happen to her being with HaKashverosh, whatever, that's a different matter. But anyway, number two, also Rashi says, the Nes happened through a woman, which is the famous story of Yehudis, giving the Greek general over there cheese and then wine and chopping off his head. So for those two reasons, women are also chayiv in the nest in the mitzvah of Hanukkah. So therefore, a woman can be lighting the menorah and be motzi a man with it. Okay. Continues the Gemara. Omer of Sheshach, ach tenoi chayez b'ner Chanukah. A guest, so a person, let's say, staying over as a guest in somebody's house, he is also chayev to light the menorah. Now, we learned before that the primary mitzvah, we said the mitzvah is ner issue based. So each person and his household has to have a Chanukah light. So now, he's not at home. He's staying by somebody else, so he has to light over there. Now, how do we do that? Omer of Zera, Meresh ki havein of Zera. So Rav Zera says, originally, when I was learning in yeshiva, before I got married, what I would do is I would join in with my host. I would, instead of lighting my own menorah over there, I would join in. I would give my host some prutas to participate in the cost of the oil, and then when he lit menorah, he would have me in mind as well. I would join in with my host by giving him some prutas towards the cost of the oil and the wick for the menorah. After I got married, and he's still away sometimes from home, learning in yeshiva and being a guest by other people, Amina, so I said to myself, now I don't need to do that anymore. Now I don't need to participate in my host's menorah lighting. Because they're lighting for me at home, because my wife is lighting, and she will be mosi me. So that's in fact the halacha, that if a person is having the menorah lit for him at home, then he doesn't have to light where he is now. But if not, that's only if they're within the same time zone, I would imagine. So I don't know for sure. I haven't looked it up in Poskim, but I would have to imagine if a person is, let's say, in Eretz Yisrael when his family is home in America or vice versa or whatever, then maybe that wouldn't work, because when they're lighting is not at all the time when he's chayav. It's 7 hours apart. Anyway, but here, Bapashis, we're talking about when they're within the same time zone. So if they're lighting for him at home, and he knows for a fact that they are, then good. Otherwise, yeah, he either has to light his own where he is, or be mishtakif with his host by giving him some money towards it.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Is the wife knows that you're going to be away, let's say, for Hanukkah,
mm-hmm.
is she allowed to light for you at your time, even though it's
early
for her?
No, definitely not. So she would have to leave. She has to light at the proper time for herself, and then
no, she's gone.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. You can't write in the middle of the day. Okay, continues the Gemara. I'm going to be sure that maybe kol hashmonim kulon yofin l'ner. All the various kinds of oils or fuels are all good for Hanukkah lights. As we had a couple of days ago, we had a three-way machlokas whether the various oils and wicks that are mentioned in our Mishnah that you can't use for Shabbos, can you use them for Hanukkah? We had Rav Huna saying no. We had the Chista saying yes on the weekdays of Hanukkah. We had Rav saying even on the weekdays and the Shabbos of Hanukkah. We said the halacha is like Rav. So Rabbi Shulman Levi is saying all kinds of oils are fine. It means the ones in our Mishnah that are possible, but also it means even among the ones that are kosher. Now we know, we're going to learn later on in our parasha, when it comes to Shabbos candles, we say, we listed in our Mishnah various kinds that are possible, but you also have many different kinds that are kosher. So all of them are fine for Hanukkah candles. The shemen zayis min amulcher, but the best thing is olive oil. And the reason is, Mephoshim says, because after all, the mitzvah, the original mess in the Bais Mikdash happened with olive oil, because that's what they light the menorah with in the Bais Mikdash. So Abaya says, in this connection, originally my Rebbe, which is Rav, used to make a point of trying to get sesame oil for the Ner Chanukah. Why sesame oil? Because the light of it lasts much longer. It doesn't burn up as fast as olive oil. Given the Shama Lahad Rabbi Shulman Levi, once he heard what Rabbi Shulman Levi said about the best thing is olive oil, Omer Hai Solo Mahoda Tzvei, then he said, actually, you know what? It is better to use olive oil because the light of it is clearer. The light of it is clearer. In other words, even though it's true, it burns up faster, and therefore you have it last for a shorter amount of time, but as long as it's burning, it's a clearer light than you get from sesame oil. And therefore, he started lighting menorah on Hanukkah with olive oil. Tosfos points out that this is talking about Hanukkah candles. When it comes to Shabbos candles, then definitely olive oil is the best, because as we're saying, as we're going to see in a Mishnah later on in our parak, you even have an opinion of the Pauzin over there who says you can only light Shabbos candles with olive oil. The halacha is not like him. The halacha is you can light with various other kinds of oils as well, but still olive oil has the advantage because the light of it is the brightest. So, okay, nowadays you have people who are known to light Shabbos candles with olive oil. You have other people. Most people light with wax or paraffin or whatever candles, because those also give a very clear, bright light, and therefore it's also fine. Okay. Another din, the Amr of Yishuv and Levi, speaking of about different kinds of oil, Kol HaShmanim Yofin L'Diyoy, Rabbi Yishuv and Levi said all kinds of oil are good for making ink. The Shem and Vice, but again, olive oil is the best of them. Now, the way they made ink in those days was like this, and I'm not describing the process. They would start by producing soot. You would take, for example, oil or other kind of, or some other stuff that burns. You'd put a container or something above the flame. And then, as the flame burns, you would have soot collect on the inside of the container or whatever it is that you have up there. That soot is almost pure carbon. And then you would mix that with various other ingredients, including oil, and you would make the ink. So now the question is, when the Rishuv and Levi says that olive oil is the best for ink, which of those two parts of the process is he talking about? Is he talking about the first part of the process of making the soot, or is he talking about the second part of the process where you're mixing in oil and various other ingredients? So, Ibarimu, legado ola ashen. What do we mean that olive oil is the best? Do we mean it's better than other kinds of oils for mixing into the ink, or do we mean that it's better than other kinds of oils for making the soot for the ink, which is what makes the ink black? Toshma, so we have a braisa, the Tanin of Shmuel Bar Zutri, Kol Ashmanim Yofim Medyoi, a braisa of Shmuel Bar Zutri says, all kinds of oil are good for ink, Meshem and Zayas Menam Lucher, olive oil is the best. And here his braisa spells out, Bein Legabel Bein LaAshen, whether as far as mixing into the ink or whether as far as making the soot in the first place. So that's what it is. Therefore, olive oil is the best for both parts of the process. Rav Shmuel Bar Zutra Masin Hachi, Rav Shmuel Bar Zutra learned the Braita a little differently. Kol Ha'ashonim Yafid Medioi V'Shem and Zayis Min Amokur. He learned the Braita saying that all kinds of smoke, all kinds of soot are good for ink, but soot from olive oil is the best. So according to his version, in fact, only when it comes to the first part, the making the soot, is olive oil the best. When it comes to mixing in, according to his version, not necessarily is olive oil the best. Other kinds of oil might be equally good. Okay. Another statement in that connection, Amar Rav Huna, Kol HaSrafin Yafin Medyoi, Rav Huna also says that all kinds of sraf are good for ink. The sraf kaf yafin kolam, but the sraf, and we'll explain in a second what sraf is, but the sraf of kaf trees, which is balsam trees, like we have in the Torah, sorry, any other sraf, I'm not about to ask you, yafin kolam is the best of all. What is sraf? Rashi translates it by the word gum. So gum, like a thick sack that comes from a tree. Tosfos argues on that, on various grounds, and Tosfos says it just means like a thinner sack, like a liquid that oozes out of trees. Practically speaking, nowadays, the usual typical kind of ink that Sofrim use is made somewhat differently than they did in the times of the Gemara. They don't use soot and oil, like we're describing it here in the Gemara. Instead, they use a few different ingredients, one of them being gum from a certain kind of tree. So more like what Rashi says. Okay. Getting back to Dinim of Chanukah, Omer of Chiba Ashi Omer Rav, Hamad the Kner Shol Chanukah Tzorech Leboris. When a person lights the menorah on Chanukah, he needs to make a bracha. Rav Yumi Omer, Rav Yumi says another din, Haroya Ner Shol Chanukah Tzorech Leboris. Also, if a person sees a light of Chanukah, then he has to make a bracha. So what does that mean? Rashi gives two explanations. One is that just it means the person is walking down the street and he sees Chanukah light burning in one of the chaseres, then he has to make a bracha. Then Rashi brings from his Rebbeim That, no, this is only, you don't make that bracha just if you see somebody's menorah, light burning at night. You make that bracha only if you didn't yet light at home, or, for example, you're on a boat and you're not going to be able to light. Other Rishonim learn a little bit differently. They say they're similar to Rashi's second explanation, that this that the brachas that we're going to describe to seeing the menorah is only if you yourself are not going to be lighting at night and there's nobody lighting at home for you. So let's say, for example, you could have a person, let's say, for example, yeah, who's on a boat, they're not going to be able to light menorah. We're not talking, let's say, nowadays on a cruise ship or whatever, it's easy enough to light a menorah. We're talking about the kind of boat they had in the old days, where you can't really light a menorah because it'll go right out. So let's say you're in that situation, you're on a boat, you're not going to be able to light menorah yourself, you don't have anybody lighting at home for you, that is when you would make the brachas that we're going to mention in the Gemara over here. Otherwise, you'll just make the brachas when you yourself light that night. So what are the brachas? Amar of Yehuda, Yom Rishon, on the first day of Hanukkah, Haroya Ner Shel Hanukkah, Haroya, the one who sees the light of Hanukkah, Mevorach Beis, he says two out of the three brachas, or Mavlik Mevorach Gimel. The one who actually lights menorah says three brachas on the first night. Mikan ve'elach, after that, on the other nights of Hanukkah, Mavlik Mevorach Shtayim ve'roya Mevorach Achas. On the other nights of Hanukkah, if you're lighting the menorah, you say two brachas, and if you only see the menorah, you say one bracha. So in other words, what it is on the first night, we say the three brachas, lahamlik ne'er Hanukkah, she'osin nisim, and she'chiyon. If you yourself are not lighting the menorah, and you're just seeing somebody else's menorah, then you don't make the bracha, lahamlik ne'er shel Hanukkah, because you yourself are not being yotze lighting the menorah, you're only seeing somebody else's. So therefore, on the first night, you say she'osin nisim, and she'chiyonu, and the rest of the night, you say only she'osin nisim. And the one says, ma'im ba'it. What are you leaving out on the other nights of Hanukkah? That was saying that on the first night, you say, if you're lighting the menorah, you say three brachas, and the rest of the nights you say only two. Which one are you leaving out? So the answer is you're not saying Shechiyonu, because at that point, it's not Shechiyonu anymore. It's not a new thing, because you already did the mitzvah this year. So the question is, Benimot Nes, why don't you also leave out the bracha she'osem nisim? On the face of it, the Nes was only a one-time thing. And the answer is it wasn't. Nes kol yoy me'iseh, because the nes happened every day. As we discussed yesterday in connection with the Beit Yosef's question of why we have 8 days of Hanukkah rather than seven, a number of the answers to that question depend on the fact that every day the nes continued, that every day the oil didn't burn up, or every day less of it burned than usual, or whatever all the various answers. So therefore, the nes continued every single day, and therefore you say she'osem nisim every day. And on the other hand, Shechiyonu, you only say when you're doing the mitzvah the first time this year. And since after the first night, you already did it, then you don't say Shechiyonu anymore. Suppose you have, let's say, a person who didn't light menorah the first night. So then he would say Shechiyonu the first time whenever he lights that year. Next, my mevorech, what is the nusach of the bracha? Mevorach, you make the bracha like this. Asher kudoshanu mitzvayti b'tzibanu, lahavlik ner shel Chanukah. We don't say shell, but whatever, different neshoyes, and the Ashkenaz, they do say shell. So that's the bracha, that Hashem made us holy with his mitzvot and commanded us to light the lamps of Chanukah. The Rishonim also bring, the Rifa, the Rosh also bring over here the nusach of the two other brachas, she'asa nisim and she'chiyonu. So the question is, the heichon tzibanu, where did Hashem command us to light the menorah? What do you mean? It's not Daraita. It's the Rabbanan, the whole concept of lighting menorah. So what do you mean that Hashem commanded us? So the answer is because the Rabbanan made the Takana, and Hashem told us to follow what the Chachamim say. Reb Ivya Omar Miloy Sosu. Reb Ivya says, on the basis of that the Torah says, that whatever the Sanhedrin decides, you should not go away from it to the right or to the left. So therefore, if they told us to light menorah, then we have to listen to it. In effect, therefore, Hashem is giving us a mitzvah to listen to the Chachamim. And therefore, when we listen to them, then we're fulfilling Hashem's commandments. Reb Nechemiah Omar, Reb Nechemiah, Reb Nachman, Yitzchok says here on the side, Omar, he says a different pasuk that expresses the same point. The pasuk says, Sha'al Avicha V'yagecha, ask your father and he will tell you. Zekei Mecha, ask your elders, which also means your Chachamim, V'yom Rolach, and then they'll tell you what to do. So we see that we have to listen to what the Chachamim tell us. Why does Reb Nechemya need a different pasuk than Reb Ivya? A couple of reasons. One of them being that maybe Reb Ivya's pasuk, the context of Reb Ivya's pasuk, is where the Sanhedrin has a machloikis, and you have to go according to where the Chachamim of the lower Bapa didn't have a machloikis, and you have to go to the Sanhedrin to decide the final Pesach Halacha. So maybe that would only apply in that case where there was a machloikis. How would we know it also applies where the Chachamim themselves make a takana, where the Chachamim make a takana? So for that, we need the second pasuk. Also, the first pasuk is only talking about Loisa says. The second one tells us also Esther's in there. Okay, so for either of those reasons, you actually make the bracha. You have, by the way, the Rambam mentioned in his introduction to Sefer HaMitzvot that you had people before him, various Geonim and Rishonim before him, who did enumerations of the mitzvot, of the 613 mitzvot. They counted certain mitzvot d'rabbanan among them, for example, the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah, on the basis of our Gemara over here, because the Gemara is saying that we make a bracha on those mitzvot because Hashem commanded us to listen to the Chachamim. The Rambam says, absolutely not. You don't count mitzvot d'rabbanan among the 613 mitzvot. Because, yes, there is a mitzvah to listen to the Chachamim, but that doesn't mean that the specific mitzvah that the Chachamim commanded us to do, such as Ner Chanukah, actually counted among the 613. We don't do that, and therefore the Rambam leaves them all out. The Ramban, in turn, argues with the Rambam and says that maybe in some cases we should, etc. Okay. In practice, you know, I mean, once the Rambam made his enumeration, that one became the most generally accepted one. The Sefer HaChinuch uses the Rambam's enumeration also, even though he doesn't always agree with it at all times when we say Tikkun Leil Shavuos, that's the enumeration we use. And then we say, besides the 613 Daraisa, we have 7 Darabanan, one of which is Ner Chanukah. Okay. Most of Rav Amram. So Rav Amram says, I have a contradiction to this whole concept. You're telling me you make a bracha on a mitzvah Darabanan, but we learn in a Mishnah, Hadmai, when it comes to Dmai, which is produce that you bought from an Amoret, and you don't know if you took Maizu from it, Ma'arvidboi, you are allowed to use it for Eruv, you are allowed to use it for Eruv Chaseros, or Eruv Tchumen, Umishtachinboi, you're allowed to use it for Shikru Chavoyas, to make it so that as a contribution of food, to make it that you're allowed to carry it in a Mavoy. In other words, the point is, even if you didn't take Maizu from it, because as we learned in Brachos, we have the opinion of Beit Hillel, which of course is the halacha against Beit Shammai, that if a person is poor, they're allowed to eat dmai without taking ma'aser from it. A person could conceivably give away, be mafkir all his property and become poor, and then he would be allowed to eat dmai. So therefore, even now, even before he did that, dmai is considered something that's edible, and therefore you can use it for eruv or for shittur. You make a brach on it, meaning you make a mosi if it's bread. Choice is shown him over here on the side, says that also it means you make birchas hamazon on it. Or mezamnin olav, you can make a mezuman if you had 3 people together ate it, which we learned about in brachas. And here is the key point. Or mastrishin, or you say orum uvein hashmoshes. You're allowed to take maaser from it even if you're not wearing clothes, and even Bein HaShmoshes of Shabbos. Now, if it was Vaday, if definitely Maiso had not been taken from it, you would not be allowed to do either of those things. You have to be wearing clothes because you have to make a bracha, Lahafish Truma to Maisers. You can't do it Bein HaShmoshes, as we're going to learn at the end of our Perek, because at that point, because the Midrabanon, you're not allowed to take Truma to Maisers on Shabbos, and therefore you're not allowed to do it Bein HaShmoshes when it's a Sopet, whether it's Shabbos or not, but you're allowed to advise. So now the Amit Koma the Rabbanon Bari Bracha, if you're going to tell me that every time that Rabbanon tell us to do something, you have to make a bracha on it, how is the person making a bracha over here on a frosh, on taking off Maiser from Dmai when he's not wearing any clothes? After all, we know that in order to make a bracha, or in order to say any dvarim shibakdusha, as the pasuk says, you can't have to be holy, meaning that you can't be undressed, and here you don't have it, as we learned about in brachas, about saying shema, about saying brachas, so whenever you have your genitals have to be covered, at least. So how is it we're saying over here you're allowed to do that with dmai? That implies that you don't make a bracha on taking ma'aser from dmai, but you just said that we do make a bracha on things that are b'anan. But Abaya says the difference is vaday de divrei boy bracha. When you're doing something which you definitely have to do, then you make a bracha. Sofis the divrei boy bracha. But when you have something that you're doing only because of a sofis, And if it's Midrabanan, then you don't make a bracha. Here, the whole reason you're taking maaser from this produce in the first place is only based on a suffix, because maybe the Amma Oret took maaser from it, and maybe he didn't. Therefore, you wouldn't say a bracha on that. You actually have a machlok.
But Ner Chanukah is not a suffix, and you make a bracha.
Ner Chanukah is not a suffix. Ner Chanukah is badai. Ner Chanukah is badai. The Chachamim definitely told you you have to light menorah every day of Chanukah. Therefore, you would make a bracha on it. But over here, where the whole reason you're taking ma'aser from Zmai is based on a suffix, because maybe the Amma Oret took ma'aser from it, maybe he didn't, then that's not necessarily reason enough to say a bracha. You actually have a bit of a machlokas rishonim on this question. What exactly does it mean that we don't make a bracha on a suffix? What happens, for example, if a person knows that at one point he was chayev in the mitzvah, but he's not sure whether he actually did it? So in our case over here, we don't know whether he was chayev in the first place, because we don't know whether the produce was chayev and nicer. But you have, let's say, other cases, a different example is, let's say, for example, a person is not sure whether he said Shema or not. So he has to say Shema again, fine, Shema is Daraisa. Does he also say the brachas with it, which the brachas are the Rabbanim? You actually have a machlokas posting about that. And in the case of Shema, the halacha is actually paskin that you do. If you are not sure whether you said Shema, not only you say Shema again, you also say the brachas again, because the tekana was actually that when you say Shema, you say it with the brachas. Okay, but there's a bit more of discussion over here. So one way of looking at it is maybe you chayev in a bracha only when you're not sure. The Rambam, for example, writes that you don't make a bracha when it's a suffix whether you chayev in the mitzvah. For example, the Rambam gives examples. Let's say that if you're doing a milah, if you're doing a bris milah for an androgynous, where you're not sure if it's a boy or a girl, then you don't make a bracha because it's a suffix. So over here in our Gemara, we're saying that you don't make a suffix, you don't make a bracha on a suffix d'rabbanan, but the Rambam explains that also applies even if the din itself is d'oraisa, because the brachas themselves are d'rabbanan. Okay. So the question is, v'hayomtiv sheni d'suffix d'vrayimu, what do you mean that you don't make a bracha on a suffix of d'rabbanan? After all, what about when it comes to yomtiv sheni? When it comes to the second day of Yom Tov and Chutz La'aretz, that's all based on a suffix, because we only keep a second day Yom Tov and Chutz La'aretz because there was originally a suffix whether Yom Tov was yesterday or whether it's today. Ubori bracha, and we still make a bracha in Kiddush. We still make a bracha of Kiddush for the second day of Yom Tov, even though it's a suffix. The answer is Hosin Piyechi Deloyluzul Zuliba. The answer is, you're right. In principle, we shouldn't be making a bracha. However, the Chachamim did not want that we're going to be treating the second day of Yom Tov carelessly. If we don't make a bracha on it, people are going to think, oh, it's not really Yom Tov, and they're going to get careless, and they're going to end up doing malach on it. Therefore, in that particular case, the Chachamim told us we should make a bracha even on a Sabbath. But ordinarily, we wouldn't. Rava gives a different answer, that according to Rashi, Rava is actually arguing with Abaya. Usually, in fact, you would make a bracha even on a suffix d'rabbanan, which explains, for example, why you make a bracha on the second day of Yom Tov. We don't need the reason of Abaya, that because we might come to be mezalzel on it. But in the case of Dmai, it's different. Roiv Amma Oret, Ma'asir and Hain, the fact is most Amma Oret do take Ma'asir. So therefore, the whole concept that you have to take Dmai, is that you have to take Ma'asir from Dmai, is really only a chumra that the Chachamim were Ma'asir on us. Therefore, Rava says that's reason to not make a bracha on it, as opposed to most Seikas that Rabbanan are more than just a chumra. For example, the second day of Yom Tov, or other cases. So according to Rashi, Rava is actually arguing with Abaya's reason. Abaya had said that generally you don't make a bracha on a suffix d'rabbanan unless you have the special situation of where we don't want you to be mezalzel in it, where we don't want people to get careless in it. But according to Rava, According to Rava, no, we don't usually say that. Usually we say actually that you're not, that you don't need to make a bracha on a thing that abanan, with the exception of, with the exception of, usually you do have to, rather, with the exception of Gmai, because not really a suffix that abanan. There are other Rishonim who learn the Ramban, the Ran talk about that. Not necessarily are Abaya and Rava arguing, because what we're saying is that what Rava is saying that there'd be a difference between something where the essential mitzvah is daraisa, for example, taking raisa is itself daraisa, versus, for example, Ner Chanukah, which is intrinsically Rabbanan. And therefore, again, Meiser being something that is intrinsically Daraisa, really we should have to make a bracha on it, were it not for the fact that Roy Bamei Oris Matzunin, as opposed to Abaya is talking about, where the intrinsic din itself is only the Rabbanon. For example, why in the Menorah and Chanukah, where there you only make a bracha out of Bade and not a Sunday. Okay. Continues the Gemara. Amar Rav Huna, Chotzer Sheyeshla Beis Tzachim. Suppose you have a chotzer that has two openings. Now, we learned before that we said Rashi had learned that when we said that you're supposed to light the menorah at your outside door, so we learned that Rashi had said that it means if your house is open to a chotzer, then what you do is you light the menorah by the door of your house that goes out to the chotzer. We said that Tosfos learned differently and said that it means that you light it by the door of the chotzer that goes out to the Shofar Abim. So Tosfos, in fact, brings a proof from Al Gemara over here, because he was talking about a chotzer. So suppose you have a chotzer that has two entrances. So it has, the Rashi would say that it means that the house has two entrances to the chotzer. Anyway, the point is, Tricha Shtei Neiris. You have to light menorah by both of those entrances, because otherwise a person passes by the other entrance and doesn't see a menorah there. They're going to think, look at this, look at the sky. It's not lighting menorah, and it's not lighting the menorah on Chanukah. Therefore, you have to light at both entrances. But Omar Rava, now Rava also says in that connection, Loi Amoran Ela Mishtei Ruchos. That applies only if the two entrances are on two different sides. Ava Meruach Achas Loi. But if it's on one side, if they're both on one side, then you don't need it. Then you don't need to light menorah by both of them. So the question is, my time, why would there be a difference between two sides versus one side? Ilema mishum chashta. Are you going to say the reason is because people are going to suspect him of not lighting menorah? And we know in general a person is obligated to act in a way that people shouldn't suspect him. It's not enough to do things in a way that Hashem knows what you're really doing. You have to do things in a way that Yisim Nekiyim Me'Hashem Yisrael. You have to act in a way that other Jews are not going to suspect you of doing something wrong either. So you're going to say that it's because of that. Well, we have to ask Chashta the man. Who are we concerned is going to be Choshed in? Ilema Chashta Da'alma. Are we concerned that there's a chashad of people from other cities that are going to be passing through and see that there's no menorah by this door and think that he's not a yid who's careful in mitzvahs? Well, then after the beruach achas nami libayi, then it should require, even if it's all on one side, because people from other cities don't know, they're not going to realize that these two doors belong to one house. As far as they know, they belong to two different houses. It's like many of the houses in Crown Heights nowadays. We have a duplex. We have two doors going into the same building, and they belong to two different apartments. So a person from another city is not going to know that. If he sees a door without a menorah in front of it, he's not going to realize that it's the second door of the same house, even if they're both on the same side. He's going to think that it's two different apartments within the same house, and one of them is being killed. So you should have to light the menorah by both of them, even in that case. And Ichashed Ibnei Moser, if you're talking about the people who live in town are going to be suspecting him of not lighting menorah, then they know that his house has two doors. Then it shouldn't require, even if his house, though his chaser, has two doors, because they know already, they live in town, they know that his house has a front door and a back door, they know that his chaser has a front door and a back door, they're not going to suspect him of not lighting in the other one, even if they're in different directions. So what are we talking about? What's the scenario where if it's on one side, then you don't have to light a second one, but if it's on two different sides, then you do? The answer is, La'olam mishum chashta d'bnei masa. We are actually only concerned about chashad from people in the city. We're not concerned about people from other cities for two reasons, Mephoshim say. Number one, because people from other cities are not likely to be in town at the time when you're lighting menorah. Remember, you only light menorah at night. So by that time, you don't usually have people from other cities, might be in town during the day to do business or whatever, but they, the pastors, go home to their own cities before dark most of the time. So therefore, there's less reason to be worried about chashad from them. Second of all, precisely because they're not from town, the Meiri says that precisely because they're not from town, they don't know how the houses are laid out in the city. So when they see a house that doesn't, when they see a door that doesn't have a menorah by it, they're not going to be choshed anyway. They're going to say, okay, look, we don't know how the houses are laid out in the city. Maybe this guy has two doors. So we're not worried about chashad from people outside the city. We're only worried about chashad from people in the city. But but even people who live in the same city, sometimes they pass by one side and not by the other. Again, if the doors are facing in different directions, but Avli, and they say, and they're going to say to themselves, just like we see he didn't light by this door, we assume we're going to be choshed him that he didn't light by the other door as well. And therefore, to avoid that, we say that he has to light by both doors. That way, anybody in town, regardless which side they pass by, will see a menorah lit there. Now, it does say in Shulchan Aruch, but nowadays, that most of us light indoors, then this isn't really an issue. Because in any case, we light indoors, so therefore, there's less, you don't have to light menorahs by the various doors of the house in order for people not to be choshed. Because anyway, everybody knows that you light indoors. Okay. Mm-hmm. So the Gemara says, where do you get this idea in the first place that we're concerned about what other people are choshed? What do we care what other people think? Hashem knows the truth. You know the truth. Let them think whatever they want. Who says that we have to be careful about that? So to Tanya, in fact, we learn in a braisa, Amr of Shimon, b'shvil abba dvarim, Amr of Torah, l'hamiyach peyah b'seif sadeu. Rav Shimon says, now, the Torah, there's four reasons that the Torah says that you should leave peyah for the poor people at the end of the field. Now, in principle, we know you have peyah d'oraisa, there's no particular amount for it, as we say every day in morning brachas, eilu d'vonim shein lam shirah peyah, v'abikorim, etc. So d'oraisa, there's no fixed amount of peyah, it can be even a tiny amount. D'rabbanan, it's supposed to be at least 1/60th, but on the face of it, that 1/60th, let's say, you could leave anywhere in the field. Why, Dafka, do you have to leave it at the end of your field? So Rav Shimon's saying there's four reasons, and one of the reasons, as we go through them, is going to be because people are going to suspect him of not doing the mitzvah. So we see that people not suspecting somebody is an important factor, and you have to take that into consideration. Therefore, you have to do the mitzvah in a way that people are not going to suspect you. So what are the four reasons? Let's make gezel on him. First, because of stealing from the poor people, or if they bittul on him, and because wasting the poor people's time, we're going to explain in a second what all these things mean, or if they chashad, the third reason is because people will suspect him of not doing the mitzvah, or mishum bal tachala, and the fourth reason is because the pasuk says not to end off your field. So what does that mean? If they gezel on him, means like this, shalayira balabayis shalp nuriya, you don't want the balabayis is going to look for a time when there are no aniyim nearby, when there are no poor people nearby. And then he's going to go to his relative who's a poor person and say, here is a payah, you take it. So to avoid, if he was allowed to give payah from any part of his field, he could do that. Wait until there are no aniyim around and then give it to one particular ani. Like this way, he has to give it at the end of his field. By the time he's reaching that part of his field, the aniyim know to expect it. Therefore, they're going to be around, and therefore, he's not going to be able to get away with giving it to one particular person. That's one reason. Number two, Amud Bey, almost say bittul aniyim. The second reason is in order not to waste the poor people's time. Means shaloyu aniyim yoshvin mashamrim achshav maniach balabayis peyah. This way, the aniyim don't have to sit around and wait. Now the balabayis is going to be giving peyah and wasting their time. Like this, again, it's given only at the end of the harvest. Therefore, the Aniyim can look ahead and see, okay, he's going to be getting to the end of his harvest at such and such a time. Therefore, we know to come at that time. We know we don't have to be coming. We don't have to be coming earlier than that. The third reason of nechashad, the third reason because of suspicion. This is why we're bringing this in our Gemara. Means shloiyu oven v'shavin oven, like this. If he doesn't leave it at the end, people see at the end that he's harvesting the end of the field, people are going to think that he didn't give payah at all. They didn't know that he gave payah before, and the poor people already took it. You don't want passers by to be saying, Tobin the Eira la Adam Shleiniach payah b'sadehu, that a curse should come on a person who doesn't leave payah in his field. So therefore, we don't want that. We don't want people to be choshed him. In fact, on the side of it here, it brings in an interesting thing that also not only it means that they're going to be suspecting him, but it means they're going to be over on the mitzvah of cursing another yid for no reason. So we don't want that. And number four, Mishum Bal Techala. We said Rav Shimon's fourth reason is because the pasuk says, "Don't end off your field," which implies when you're getting to the point of ending off your field, of finishing your harvest, is when you're supposed to get payah. What do you mean? How is that a separate reason? Also, kulu lav mishum bal techala. What do you mean? All of these reasons that we said is explaining why the Torah tells us lo techala. How is that a fourth reason on its own when all those previous three reasons are meant to explain why the Torah is telling us that's what you get paid at the end? The answer is omar rabim pnei haramoyim. Rabba says, right, the reason lo techala is meant, the fourth reason, lo techala, what it means is, why is the Torah, what's another reason why the Torah tells you to give it at the end? Because of cheaters. Because if you're allowed to give payah anywhere in the field, what's going to happen when a person is finishing off his harvest and he's not giving payah? People are going to say, no, don't you know you're supposed to give payah? And he's going to say, yeah, I already gave it earlier in the field. And people aren't going to know that he's not telling the truth, and therefore he gets away with it. So like this, by telling him to give it at the end, that avoids that people are not going to be able to cheat and finish off their harvest and say that they already gave payah. Okay, so the point is, in other words, we see that one of Rav Shimon's reasons is based on the idea you don't want people to suspect him, and so this, by the same token, when it comes to lighting the menorah on Hanukkah, you don't want people to suspect that he didn't light it. Therefore, as we said, a chaser that has two entrances, or as Rashi says, a house that has two entrances into the chaser, you need to light by both of them. Okay. More
what about the expense?
Again, not nowadays because you light indoors, but in the olden days, yeah. Maybe this din would still apply in places like in Eretz Yisrael where they light outdoors. I don't know. Okay. Amar of Yitzchak bar Radifa, Amar of Huna. Ner shiyesh la shnei piyos. Suppose you have a lamp that has two openings. Rashi described the kind of lamps they had in those days were made generally out of earthenware. You had two holes in it. You had a larger hole, which is where you would pour in the oil, and then you had a smaller hole, which is what the wick would stick out of. So suppose you have a lamp was made with two holes for wick. So suppose you have this bigger hole in the middle for oil, and then you had two holes on the side for wick. So then, the Beis Bnei Adam, such a lamp counts for two people. Meaning Rashi says, let's say, for example, we learned before that you have the Mahadrin who light a separate candle for every individual person in the house. So let's say a person wants to do that. So let's say a person has two people in the house. Let's say you have a husband and wife. Then okay, he can light he lights this one lamp that has two wicks sticking out of it on the two sides, and that counts for the two of them. It's interesting that Rashi doesn't mention the example of, let's say, you have two people who want to share it, two people who live next door to each other and want to share it, and the Mefarshim explained the reason is, because then it wouldn't work. Given that we said before that you have to have the menorah is supposed to be on the side opposite the door, it's supposed to be on the side opposite the mezuzah, rather, then if you have two people next door, if two people's doors are next to each other, then their mezuzahs are not going to be next to each other, so therefore their menorahs are not going to really be able to be next to each other either. So therefore Rashi couldn't give that as the example. Therefore Rashi had to give it as the example of two people who are a person who's lighting menorah on behalf of all the people in his house. Different explanation. The Ran says we could also be talking about, let's say we said before, that guests have to light on their own unless they're going to be mishtatep with the balabas. The same thing, we could be talking about two guests who are lighting menorah. Tosfos who learns that everybody who lives in the chaser lights it by the door of their chaser, they, in fact, this is another one of their proofs that's what you do, because they would say this is what we're talking about, that you light it by the door of the chaser, and therefore that two people can be sharing the same one, because they're all lighting it by the same doorway of the chaser anyway. Okay. Anyway. Amar Rava. Rava says another din. Mile ka'ara shemen. Suppose a person fills up a bowl with oil. He keeps up silas, and he surrounds that bowl with wicks. So, it depends. if before he lights it, kofa alel kli, if before he lights it, he overturns another bowl or whatever on top of it, which therefore, when he lights them, it separates one wick from another, and it prevents all the flames from joining together, then it counts on behalf of multiple people, because each flame is distinct from each other one. But if he did not overturn a keli on it, and he just lit it with all those wicks sticking out on all sides, then it comes out as like a bonfire, because then all the flames of all the wicks end up joining together. So then it's not like a candle anymore. Then it doesn't even count for one person, because the mitzvah of Hanukkah is that you have individual flames, not one big flame like we have a Havdalah candle. So if you didn't separate the flames, then you would have a problem and it wouldn't count. The Bala Itur, one of the Rishonim, says that if the wicks are at least an esva apart, then you don't have an issue, because then they're far enough apart, even without something on top, even without a keli on top of them, they're far enough apart that they're not going to join together. Okay. Amar Rava, another thing. Rava says, Shitali, now it's obvious to me as follows. Now let's talk about cases where a person can't afford all the various things that he needs. So let's say, Ner Beisoy v'Ner Chanukah, suppose that a person has a choice. They have enough money to, he's poor, but it comes Shabbos Chanukah. He doesn't have enough money for Shabbos candles and for Chanukah candles. And Ner Beisoy v'Ner Chanukah, if he has the choice between lighting candles for his house, meaning to illuminate his house on Shabbos, versus Ner Chanukah, no question Ner Beisoy, or just Mishum Shloim Beisoy. There's no question that the light for his house comes first because of Shalom Bayis. The reason behind lighting Shabbos candles in the first place is because of Shalom Bayis, because otherwise people have a hard time sitting in the dark and they may trip over things and whatever. So having light in the house promotes Shalom Bayis. So therefore, that's more important. So therefore, Robert says that point is obvious. And by the way, the Rambam brings that halacha at the end of Hilchot Chanukah and expands on it on the idea that Shalom is a great thing. The whole Torah was given only in order to make Shalom in the world. There's a couple of sichas where they never talked about why the Rambam goes into such length about it, and why the Rambam puts that in Hilchot Chanukah rather than you would think it would belong more in Hilchot Shabbos, because it's stressing the importance of Shabbos candles. So there's a sicha where they never talked about the idea that what we're saying is, even though the Neris Chanukah are meant to a certain extent, they also represent Shalom. They represent that we defeated the evil of the Greeks and reestablished the Beis Mikdash. Nevertheless, the Shalom that's promoted by the Shabbos candles, because you're able to see around in your house, is a greater Shalom. And therefore, in other words, in that sense, it belongs in Hilchot Chanukah, because like we're stressing, as much as there is the Shalom of Chanukah, that Shalom is enhanced by having Shabbos candles in the house. That's the gist of the sicha. You have to look at the sicha inside. It's a sicha from in Chavis Kesvav, I think, where they have analyzed it in detail. Okay. Anyway, continues Rava. Ner Beisoy v'Kiddush Hayom. Another case. Suppose a person has a choice between lights for Shabbos and wine for Kiddush. Also, Ner Beisoy Adrif Mishum Shalom Beisoy. The answer again would be that Ner Beisoy is more important because again Shalom Bayis. So in that case, according to many Rishonim, what he'll do in that case is he'll make Kiddush on bread. Tosfos over here discusses that not necessarily. You can't necessarily make Kiddush. Tosfos learns that you can't necessarily make Kiddush on bread. However, what it is you have Rishonim actually who learn that at least on a Daraisa level, all you need to do is say something in honor of Shabbos to be Yotze Kiddush. We do that in practice when Yom Kippur is Friday night. We can't make Kiddush on wine, obviously. We just say by Echulah and Shul. At that point, according to the Poskim, who say that you can be Yotze Kiddush on a Daraisa level with that, then that's how we Yotze Kiddush on Yom Kippur. But other than that, yeah. Okay. So again. So Shabbos candles, we're saying, go ahead of Chanukah candles and also ahead of Kiddush. What about, the question is, Boi Rava, Ner Chanukah v'Kiddush Hayom Mahu? What if the choice is between money for Chanukah lights or money for wine for Kiddush? Then what do we do? Kiddush Hayom Adif the Tadir. Do we say that Kiddush comes first because it happens more often? So you make Kiddush every week as opposed to Hanukkah is only once a year. Maybe the Hanukkah light goes first because of the Suminissa, because of publicizing the nest. So that was his question. Later on, after Rava asked the question, he eventually came up with the answer, yes, Ner Chanukah Odis Mishum Persumin Nissa. In that case, Ner Chanukah comes first because the Persumin Nissa is more important. So therefore, in that case, again, either he would make Kiddush on bread according to the poskim who allow it, or according to the poskim who don't allow it, he would just be yotzei by saying Vayechulu. So in that case, by the way, what it says in Shulchan Aruch, now it doesn't mean obviously in that case you wouldn't be lighting the number of lights that we do on Hanukkah, two on the second night and three on the third night or whatever. He would just do the basic mitzvah that we learned on Chafala from the days, just lighting one lamp every night of Hanukkah for the whole family. And then if whatever money he has left, if he has money left after that, then he uses it to buy wine for Kiddush. And only if he has money after that, only then does he start getting more candles in order to do Mahadrim and Mahadrim. Tosfos, by the way, mentions another point in this connection. Given that we're saying Pesumen Nisse is more important, then we learn from that. So Tosfos, suppose that Rosh Chodesh comes out on Shabbos Chanukah, and you have a choice which Haftorah are you going to read. Are you going to read the Haftorah of Shabbos Rosh Chodesh or the Haftorah of Chanukah? The answer is, you read the Haftorah of Chanukah, again, because Pesumen Nisse. And that's what we do. Although on Minhag is we also say afterwards the first and last pasuk of that Torah of Rosh Chodesh. Continues the Gemara. Amar Rav Huna, Harogil Bener. If a person is regular about lighting the candles, primarily we're talking about the candles of Chanukah. If a person is careful about that, having a bonim tamar chachamim, then he will have children who are Tamar Chachamim. Because the connection is, Rashi says, because Ner Mitzvah V'Torah Ur. So Rashi actually learns, we're talking about the Neris of Shabbos and Hanukkah. So if a person is careful with the Neris of Shabbos and with the Neris of Hanukkah, then he will be, then because of that, Ner Mitzvah V'Torah Ur, therefore he will be Zoicha, that he will have the light of Torah through his children. There's a sikha where it ever talks about that primarily we're talking about more primarily talking about Neris Chanukah, and the reason is, again, because we've talked about the last couple of days, the idea that Neris Chanukah represents how the Greeks wanted to take away the uniqueness of Torah and make it like every other science or every other whatever, that it's just a human thing, and therefore when a person is careful with Neris Chanukah, showing that he's internalized the message, that it's not like that, but rather Torah, Chachmasa, Rasona, Shalakadosh Baruch Hu, then in the course of that is he has children who are Tamar Chacham, who learn Torah as Hashem's Torah, the way it should be. Continues the Gemara, Harzahu b'mezuzah, a person who is careful with the mitzvah of mezuzah, he'll have the course to have a nice house. Because he has a nice mezuzah, so therefore he's careful with the mezuzah, therefore he has a nice house. Now, a person is careful with the mitzvah of tzitzis, he's zoicha to have nice clothing. A person is careful with kiddush on Shabbat to actually make it on wine rather than, let's say, not to be yotzei with bread, he will have the kuch to eventually fill up barrels of wine. In fact, there's a Gemara in Megillah that tells us that very thing happened to Rav Huna himself. Rav Huna himself was originally very poor, but he one time even pawned his belt in order to buy wine for Kiddush. And in the end, he became very rich and he had plenty of wine. Marsha focuses on the fact that with the first one, with the Ner, we said Harogil, if he's regular in it, whereas all the other ones we said Hazor, that he's careful with it. But Tosfos says the difference is because all these other things, Mezuzah and Tzitzis and whatever, are things that a person himself, that the man of the house himself does, as opposed to Ner Shabbos. He himself doesn't light Shabbos candles, his wife does. So Harogil means that he's regular at reminding her to light Shabbos candles, as we're going to learn later on in the Perek, that the husband has to remind his wife to light Shabbos candles. Okay. So the Gemara continues. In this connection, that we're saying a person is careful with the nearest and he's zoicha to his children or some of the Chachamim. So Rav Huna have a rogel to have a cholos betoni apiska that Rav Oven Nagra. Rav Huna used to regularly pass by all the time by the door of Rav Oven the carpenter. chazer to have a rug of the shraggy tuba. He saw that Rav Ovin regularly has a lot of candles lit for Shabbat. Omar, so he said, Trey Gavri Radrevi Naskim Mehocha. Because of that, two great Tamar Chachamim will come out from this household. And sure enough, Naskim Mehocha, Rav Idi Ba'ovin, Rav Chia Ba'ovin. Sure enough, Rav Ovin, this Rav Ovin the carpenter, had two children who were great Tamar Chachamim. And among the Amoraim, Rav Idi Ba'ovin and Rav Chia Ba'ovin. Tosfos learns that what we mean is both the husband and the wife were careful with the mitzvah over there. Therefore, they had the chutz to have two children, as opposed to the next story in the Gemara, where only one of them was, and therefore they only had one son who was a Talmud Chacham. Marsha learns differently. Marsha says that Rav Huna's case was that they were careful with having many candles for Shabbat and for Chanukah, so they were doing two mitzvahs, as opposed to the next one in the Gemara, is that they were doing only one of them, only Shabbos candles or only Chanukah candles. Okay. So the next one, Rav Chista have a rogo to have a cholof the tani apischa de ben nosha de Rav Shizvi. Rav Chista used to regularly pass by the ben nosha of Rav Shizvi. What is ben nosha? Rashi gives two explanations. One is that ben nosha means Rav Shizvi's father's house, and the other explanation is that it means that his father-in-law's house. So in other words, this is before Rav Shizvi was born, or maybe when he was a little boy or whatever. So it would be his future father-in-law, according to Rashi's second explanation. Tosfos mentions over here that it does mean his father's house, but it means his father had already passed away. If his father was still alive, then the expression would be Bei Avuha. Because his father had already passed away, therefore the expression is instead Bei Nasha. Anyway, the point is Rav Chista would regularly pass by that house. Chazer to have a rogo b'shragi tova. Again, he saw that in this household they always regularly have a lot of lights on Shabbos or on Chanukah, as the case may be. Amar gavra rabba nafik mehacha. So he said a great Talmud Chacham is going to come from this household. Nafik menayu Rav Shizvi, and true enough, Rav Shizvi came from that household. Now, if we say according to Rashi's second explanation that it means Rav Shizvi's father-in-law, still, it's considered that Rav Shizvi came from that household because eventually Rav Shizvi married their daughter, and therefore it's considered that he came from that household. They had the schus that they had such a son-in-law in the schus of being careful with the lights of Shabbos or Chanukah. Again, according to Tosfos, what it is that here in this household, only the woman was careful, only the woman of the house was careful with the lights. Therefore, they only had the schus for one great son or son-in-law. According to Marsha, what it is we're talking they were only careful with one of the mitzvahs, Shabbos or Chanukah, as opposed to in the previous case with Rav Ovin, where he was careful with both. Okay. More on the topic of Shabbos lights. Rav Yosef's wife would light Shabbos candles very late, close to when Shabbos began. Now, obviously, she knew you can't light on Shabbos itself, but she would light as close as possible to Shabbos. Why would she do that? One reason is, the Mefarshim explained, because she figured that if you light it earlier, it's not necessarily obvious that you're lighting them L'Kavod Shabbos. So she figured, therefore, you should light them as close as possible to Shabbos, but this way it would be recognizable that she's doing it L'Kavod Shabbos. Also, there's an idea that some of the Rishonim say lighting Shabbos candles should be the last malacha that you do before Shabbos begins. We know that in general, when a woman lights Shabbos candles, she usually accepts Shabbos with it. So therefore, that is the actual last malacha that she does. But even if it's not like that, it should be, as much as possible, the last malacha that you do. Therefore, she would light Shabbos candles very close to when Shabbos begins.
That's for a woman, right? Not for a man.
Well, so even for a man does not necessarily accept Shabbos candles, does not necessarily accept Shabbos with lighting Shabbos candles. Nevertheless, it is better if he does and doesn't do any malacha after it. But you're right, it's not as much of an obligation on him. Anyway, so therefore she was lighting as close as possible to Shabbos. All the Rav Yosef says that's not the right thing to do. Because Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, the Pasuk says, Lo yomish amud ha'onan yoimam ba'amud ha'ish layla. The Pasuk says the pillar of cloud that led the Jewish people in the desert would not move away by day, and the pillar of fire would not move away by night. Now, That's an extra pasuk. The pasuk already mentions that there was a pillar of fire by night and a pillar of cloud by day. So what is it adding, saying lo yomish, that it wouldn't move away? It means melamed sha'amud onan mashlim la'amud ha'esh. We learn from this that the amud onan would be there completing the time when the amud ha'esh came. In other words, the amud ha'esh, the pillar of fire, would come a little bit early, would come a little, but when it came, the amud onan would still be there. It wouldn't go away and then the amud ha'esh would come. The amud onan would stay a little extra. The amud ha'esh, mashlim la'amud onan, and vice versa. In the morning, the amud ha'esh would stay a little longer as the Amud HaOnan is coming. So we see from that, in other words, the proper thing is not to do things at the last moment, but rather to go, but rather to do things a little bit earlier. So therefore, by the same token, when it comes to lighting Shabbos candles, you should be lighting Shabbos candles a little bit earlier, just like the Amud HaOnan and the Amud HaEsh would come a little bit earlier than they need to. Sabralak Duma, so now she figured, okay, so then I'll light Shabbos candles when it's still broad daylight out. Amalahahu Sabra, so a certain old Kaman Chacham told her, and as we learned before, that might be Eliyahu Navi Tanena. We learn in a Braisa, Ovelvad Shalom Yachdim Lo Yachdim. You shouldn't light it too early, because then it's not obvious that you're lighting the Kabbat Shabbos, and not too late either. So you should have a certain time during which you should light Shabbos candles. The actual halacha in Shulchan Aruch is you're allowed to light as early as Plaga Mincha. You're allowed to light as early as Plaga Mincha, which is 1 1/4 Shoris Zmanias before Shkia. If you light any earlier than that, no good, and you have to relight them again with Kabbat Shabbat. Because once you light, when you light it, Plaga Mincha and on, then fine, it can be obvious you're doing it with Kabbat Shabbat. But you can't light them too late. Obviously, you can't light them after Shkia, and the ideal thing is you light them as we do 18 minutes before Shkia, or in some places, they do it even earlier, by the way. In the Minhag in Yerushalayim is that their regular candle lighting time is 40 minutes before Shkia, and there are a few places in Eretz Yisrael outside of Yerushalayim where they also have that minhag.
Remind us why it's called Plaga Mincha.
Because it's half of Mincha Kama. We learned before, we learned in Brachas, and we learned in the first Tzedek of Amos Esther, that Mincha Ktana begins 9.5 hours into the day, because that was usually the time when they finished bringing the Korban Tumah on a regular day. From 9.5 hours until 12 hours, which is Shkia, is 2.5 hours. Plaga Mincha is halfway through that time, 1 1/4 Shoris Manias before Shkia.
Okay. So it's between Mincha Gedola and
Shkia? Halfway between Mincha Ktana and Shkia.
Ktana.
Halfway between Mincha Ktana and Shkia, yeah, it's called Plaga Mincha. Continues the Gemara, we said that if a person is careful with the light of Shabbos and the light of Hanukkah, then they have a chus to have children who are Shomer Chachamim. So in this connection, Omar Rava, so Rava says a similar thing, Derochim Rabbanon, a person who loves Shomer Chachamim, Havalei Dmin Rabbanon, he will have a chus to have children who are themselves Shomer Chachamim. The Moikir Rabbanon, a person who respects the Tamar HaChamim, which is not quite the same as loving them, but he has respect for them, Havodahu Chasnevosa Rabbanon, he will have the schus to have sons-in-law who are Tamar HaChamim. And the Dochim Rabbanon, a person who fears the HaChamim, who Gufay have it through him in Rabbanon. He himself then will have the schus to, that himself he will be a Tamar HaChamim. The idea is, in other words, that if he loves Tamar HaChamim, then he has the chus. So Marsha talks about, usually we say that Ahava is greater than Yira. Here it seems to be an exception to the rule. The fact that he has Yira for Tamar HaChamim, where he's following what it says, so therefore, usually Ahava is greater than Yira. The point is, Marashah says, if he already loves Tamar Chachamim, it means he himself must be a Tamar Chacham. Because we have other Gemaras, we have a Gemara in Sochim, for example, that says that the Amei Ha'aretz hate the Tamar Chachamim. So if he loves Tamar Chachamim, then he himself must be a Tamar Chacham. Therefore, you can't say that he himself is therefore going to be a Tamar Chacham. We have to say, therefore, that his children are going to be Tamar Chachamim. Rashi says it differently. Rashi says, because a father loves his children, so therefore, if he loves Tamar HaChamim, then in the course of that, he's gonna have children who are going to be Tamar HaChamim themselves, and he'll have the same kind of love for them. So if he respects them, then instead he has sons-in-law, and if he fears Tamar HaChamim, then instead, then he himself is then it means, so going with what Marashal says, he fears them, so we don't know that necessarily that he himself is a Talmud Chacham yet, because if he was a Talmud Chacham, he would already love them. So therefore, he himself, though, will eventually have, of course, to become a Talmud Chacham. He will be a Tzuvah Min Abanon, at least he'll be a young Talmud Chacham. Tzuvah Min Abanon literally means somebody who was singed by the Chachamim, meaning a person who learns by the Chachamim. Now, if he's not capable of that, he's not capable of learning Torah by the Chachamim, then at least Mishtaman Milik Ketuvim and Abanon. Then his chus will be, as his chus for that he feels the Chachamim, will be that people will listen to him like they listen to a young Talmud Chacham. The Hagoris HaGurah, by the way, flips around these last two. He says that it's the other way around. If he fears the Rabbanon, then he'll have sons-in-law who are Rabbanon. And if he respects the Rabbanon, then he himself will be a Tzuvim and Abanon. Okay, different views, sir. All right, so we'll stop over here and then we'll continue tomorrow. Tomorrow we're going to digress for a bit from the halacha. Mostly we're finished with the halacha of Hanukkah now. The Gemara is now going to take up something from our Mishnah, and then on Daf Chaf Daled we're going to get back to more dinim of Hanukkah.
Thank you very much. Have a wonderful day.
You're welcome.
What time tomorrow?